Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Targeted Talks. I'm your host, Nicole Tucker. In this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Mark Agolnik, a sarcoma medical oncologist at the City of Hope Comprehensive Cancer Center, who runs the sarcoma program. Dr. Agolnik discusses the advances and pending innovations in the treatment of sarcoma. So I'd like us to start with you discussing the advances in sarcoma molecular diagnostics.
So over the years, what we've seen is that we have a clear understanding of the ability to work on our pathology with respect to our sarcoma diagnosis and really establish the true histologies that we're working with. As we know, sarcomas really encompass a large number of different tumors, and it's important to understand the true histology in order to put it in the bucket it needs to be in order to give the patient the best outcomes with respect to treatment options. As we've evolved over time, we know that just working with our pathologist and getting a histology is not good enough. What we then need to also figure out is what is the molecular drivers of the tumor in order to see whether or not we could partner the patients up with clinical trials if there are any available for this specific patient, or if we could treat the patients with FDA-approved drugs on or off labels. And so in our practice, what we do is any patient with a GI stromal tumor, we would end up getting molecular diagnostics on that patient to understand the driving mutations that is enabling this tumor to exist. Once we have those driving mutations, then we could partner in order to try to get the right drug for the patients. For patients who have other sarcoma histologies, what we tend to do is for any patient with metastatic disease or unresectable disease, we get a full molecular panel. And so this would consider next generation sequencing. So we sequence the entire tumor in order to understand whether or not there is a driver mutation that is actionable. And by actionable, obviously, I mean something that we could use a drug to target. And so whether or not we are treating the tumors as the histology that we're establishing or treating the tumors as a tissue agnostic disease, we really try to figure out all the information we can for these tumors. If we don't have enough tissue in order to be able to do molecular diagnostics for these patients with next generation sequencing, what we will try to do is either get another tissue biopsy or we will send off blood samples for circulating tumor DNA.
Great, thank you. So once a doctor has this molecular information, can you explain the differences in treating soft tissue and bone tumors?
Yeah, so soft tissue and bone tumors are two different entities within the umbrella of sarcomas. And so we do have soft tissue sarcomas and we do have bone sarcomas. In the United States, if we pull the SEER data, we're looking at probably about 15,000 new cases of soft tissue sarcomas per year. For bone sarcomas, we have a lot less. So we could certainly have about 3,000 to 4,000 new cases per year. And so the numbers do fluctuate greatly between the two. With respect to the bone sarcomas, we tend to demograph a little bit younger. So some of our younger patients that will develop the Ewing sarcoma or osteosarcomas, we do have some of the older patients that develop chondrosarcomas. With respect to the soft tissue sarcomas, the number one that we see is leiomyosarcoma. Then we see liposarcomas and undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcomas, the next two most common sarcomas. The average age for a patient with a soft tissue sarcoma is about 61 years of age, with relatively similar between men and women, with maybe a little bit slightly increased risk in men. So with respect to treatments for the bone sarcomas, we have very clear established treatments for upfront treatment of the Ewings and osteos. The chondros become the ones where certainly finding out the molecular diagnostics can be important because we do have several trials that are looking at different abnormalities within the chondrosarcomas. And really, there is a lot of research currently being done for this patient population. With respect to the soft tissue sarcoma patients, once we establish the histology, then we're choosing the treatment based on the histology, knowing full well that the use of adriamycin-based therapies more or less cover the majority of our soft tissue sarcomas, but not all of them. With respect to second and third line treatments, there are different nuances between different drugs. Drugs like trabectedin or Yondelis is approved for leiomyosarcomas and liposarcomas, where a drug like eribulin or Halaven is approved for liposarcoma. And so certainly across the spectrum, we're going to see some variations and some differences. We know that there's a drug called Votrient or Pazopanib, and that's approved for all soft tissue sarcomas, excluding liposarcomas. And so certainly understanding the histologies will help direct the treatments that we're doing. With respect to clinical trials, what's exciting is that there are a number of clinical trials currently available for patients that have very rare histologies. And so whether or not you are able to get on standard treatments, if there's any available versus a clinical trial, I think is very important for these patients. And so one great example is a clinical trial from Raphael Pharmaceuticals that is looking at clear cell sarcomas. So that's a very rare form of sarcoma. And it's wonderful for the patients that have this disease that there is actually a trial that is looking to accrue these patients, and it is demographing for age 12 and above. And so it's also for the pediatric population, which is nice. And so right across the board, knowing what type of sarcoma the patient has really will allow them to align with a treatment approach, whether it be by treating with standard treatments versus clinical trials, and certainly getting access to the clinical trial portfolios that often live in these large academic medical centers and comprehensive cancer centers would be important. And so reaching out to the regional comprehensive cancer center would make sense. Certainly City of Hope was happy to see patients from across the country, but it's easier for patients if they're able to drive in. But certainly we have a number of patients coming to our comprehensive cancer center that are flying in for the clinical trials that we're able to offer them.
Thank you. So keeping in line with our discussion about treatment options, can you discuss the recent advances with targeted therapies and immunotherapies in the sarcoma space?
Of course, this is a wonderful question. And so patients walking into our offices are always asking about immunotherapy or other therapies that are not chemotherapy. And so the way that I view things in a very simplistic way is I see myself having the ability to give patients chemotherapy, targeted therapy, immunotherapies, hormonal therapies, supportive care therapies. And so if we look at the basket of all the treatments, targeted therapies are the first ones that we've had for patients with soft tissue sarcomas, with Pazopanib or Votrient being the first drug that was approved for all soft tissue sarcomas, excluding liposarcoma. And the approval came with the improvement in progression-free survival of about 3 to 4 months over placebo. And so it was a significant improvement, but it just wasn't as robust as we would like it to be. Over the years, we've seen several targeted therapies utilized in this space, and several have shown promise, including drugs like regorafenib. We have the NTRK inhibitors for any patients with NTRK fusions. So whether it be entrectinib or larotrectinib, patients have access to other drugs that have been approved for other conditions and certainly have some activity in soft tissue sarcoma, but are not currently FDA approved, like cabozantinib. And so we see across the tyrosine kinase inhibitor spectrum or targeted therapies that there is some utility. If we look at a rare condition like desmoid tumors, which fall often in the realm of the sarcoma specialists, but these are benign conditions, there is some evidence for activity with sorafenib, and this was published in New England Journal of Medicine several years ago. And there are some very exciting new drugs that are coming to market, hopefully soon, or being evaluated that are gamma secretase inhibitors. And so again, a targeted therapy for this relatively rare condition. And so once again, if you're a patient that has a rare condition like this, either you try to find a drug that's currently on the market, or you come out to a specialized center to really see whether or not you could get access to a clinical trial. And so currently there is a clinical trial for patients with desmoid tumors exploring a novel gamma secretase inhibitor, and that's from Ayala Pharmaceuticals. And at City of Hope, we do have access to that for our patients. Other rare conditions are conditions like tenosynovial giant cell tumors, where there is a targeted agent on the market like pexidartinib or Turalio. And so that is a condition that was often a surgical condition for patients, but now we know that we can make inroads with it by using a targeted agent for these patients. And again, once again, we don't stop at just having one drug. So there are clinical trials that are currently looking at a second drug. So Deciphera Pharmaceuticals is having a drug of clinical trial called the MOTION trial that is looking to see whether or not they could improve condition for patients with tenosynovial giant cell tumors. With respect to immunotherapies, for me, that becomes a little bit of a disappointment when you come to talking to patients, because really, if you look at NCCN guidelines, the approval of immunotherapies or the guidance to use immunotherapies is really only for a few subset of patients in our soft tissue sarcoma realm. And so most of the time when we're using immunotherapy, we are using it off-label. It is not FDA approved for this condition, but there are a lot of phase one clinical trials, some phase two clinical trials looking at the role of immunotherapy. There's always data being published. So certainly over time, I'm hoping that we'll have a bigger role for immunotherapy for our patients. But for patients who want access, we often petition to the drug companies to get compassionate use. And so that's always one mechanism in order to get it for the right patient. How do you determine the right patient becomes something that you have to think carefully about. So you'll determine it based on histology. You'll determine it based on evidence. And then I sometimes use my tumor mutational burden. So if I have a value greater than 10, it makes me more inclined to use immunotherapy for my patient. And then certainly anybody that is MSI high. And so that would be already an FDA approval. And so we would use that for those patients as well.
Wonderful. Thank you. And so you mentioned clinical trials quite a few times here, but are there any other therapeutic strategies currently under exploration that you think is important to note?
Yeah. So I think for medical oncologists in the community, I think what becomes very important is to have a very clear dialogue with a sarcoma specialist in your area or someone that you may have trained with or someone that you may have been trained by. And so I think that over the years, the sarcoma specialists around the country have trained a lot of fellows, and these fellows have then gone into community practices. So I think it's very important to stay in touch with whoever you know or reach out. So often if you're giving a lecture or giving a course or something, people will give their cell phone numbers or their email addresses out. So I think for community practices, having someone that's available to be able to give guidance is important. The secondary benefit is then they could talk about what is coming up, what is interesting, what is exciting for our patients. And so what I'm excited about, I wouldn't be working in an academic medical center if I didn't want to push the envelope with respect to clinical trials and find new therapies for our patients. What I've been very fortunate to be able to have at City of Hope is this opportunity to do phase one, phase two, phase three clinical trials specifically for sarcoma patients. And so really being able to explore all facets of drug development for these patients. And so whether it be for common histologies, we have second, third line treatments for leiomyosarcoma, for liposarcoma, for undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcomas. We have studies for angiosarcomas looking at immunotherapy, which is very exciting. And so a collaboration we did with Seattle, Washington University, was to look at the role of ipilimumab and nivolumab for patients with angiosarcomas, and that has since been published. And so now we're looking at other combinations for patients with angiosarcoma, which is very exciting, using targeted agents and using immunotherapy. We do have clinical trials, first-line trials that are novel phase one clinical trials looking to improve upon the effects of Adriamycin. And these are collaborations with pharmaceutical companies or a collaboration with Columbia University in New York. We have clinical trials for patients with very rare histologies. And so we have those, a clinical trial from the NCI looking at SDH deficient GI stromal tumors. We have trials for, as I said before, for clear cell sarcomas, for desmoids. And so if you are looking at a large academic comprehensive cancer center, hopefully a sarcoma program will have several clinical trials looking at first line, second line, third line. We have very exciting programs looking at treatment of patients with synovial sarcomas or myxoid liposarcomas, whether it be a T-cell therapies or whether it be other forms of therapy, really looking to break the boundaries of what we've been able to do for these patients. And so I think across the board, there are exciting things being done. And I think it just behooves a community oncologist just to have a phone number in their cell phone that they're able to quickly text and say, hey, I have a 31-year-old male that just came in with metastatic synovial sarcoma. What do you have? Because in all likelihood, someone's going to have something. And that thing is likely going to be a great opportunity for these patients as opposed to just getting standard of care. Standard of care will run out for patients. And so if you don't include clinical trials into the portfolio, it's going to be very hard to figure out how to get them to a longer survival advantage.
So you did mention the current guideline recommendations in regards to immunotherapy, but I'd like to dive more into the subject. So if you can explain what the current guideline recommendations are, and how do they align with practices at your institution?
So what I find is that guidelines really allow us to treat patients in a systematic, organized fashion to ensure that patients are getting the best therapies up front and the second and third line therapies in an appropriate setting. I've been very fortunate my entire career to be able to partner with NCCN and to be able to sit on their guidelines and be able to help formulate their guidelines. I've been very fortunate with the research I've been able to do to also be able to contribute to the guidelines, which is the point of being in an academic practice, is to help drive the situation forward. And so with respect to the guidelines, I would say that most community oncologists are using NCCN guidelines. There are several guidelines set up for our sarcoma patients, whether it be the soft tissue sarcoma guidelines, the bone cancer guidelines, or the GIST guidelines. And I think the guidelines are very clear. It helps physicians sort of be able to strategize how best to treat the patients. In my own practice, I use the guidelines every day. And so whether or not I'm pulling them up and printing out a sheet for the patients, I use that to show them how we should follow them long-term. So I think for patients who have had curative intent surgery, maybe don't need any chemotherapy, maybe need some radiation, I pull up the guidelines and highlight where they fall in the treatment and what they should have for a follow-up so that they are hitting the milestones they need. The worst thing we could do for our patients is to send them off after surgery with no clear follow-up. And so certainly the ability to show them that they need scans every X number of months for X number of years or lifelong is very important so they understand how to be followed up so that we could catch recurrences quickly, deal with them, and hopefully cure them a second time. With respect to treatment, I follow the guidelines all the time. The only times I veer off the guidelines is based on a clinical judgment. So if I feel that the patient's performance status isn't good enough to meet where the guidelines should be, or if I have a clinical trial, I will insert it into the areas where the guidelines would otherwise tell me to do something else. But I think it is very important to continue to treat our patients with evidence-based medicine, with the best information we have, with the best data out there. It is not possible for every patient to travel to academic medical centers. Patients are often confined to the areas that they are, whether it be because of geographic location, because of insurance, because of their work schedule, because of financial constraints. And so certainly we need to bring the guidelines to them as opposed to them to academic centers. And we need to empower our community oncologists to be able to have the tools to treat patients in a very organized, systematic, and a clear practice pattern that is going to improve the survival advantage of our patients.
Wonderful. Thank you. Is there anything you think we should add to this conversation?
I think what becomes very important is that when we talk about the treatment of sarcoma patients, we are looking at talking about 1% of adult malignancies. And when it's 1% of adult malignancies, we acknowledge the fact that it is very rare. When we break out the histology, even the most popular histology, which is leiomyosarcoma, is then only 30% of that. So that's 0.3% of all adult malignancies. And so I think that the concept of just having in your cell phone the phone number for a medical oncologist who specializes in sarcomas is very beneficial for community oncologists so that when they see this one patient a year or two patients a year, they feel empowered with the information they need to provide the treatment for these patients in a very organized, systematic, and clear way that will improve the patient's outcomes. And so the patients don't all have to go to academic medical centers. What the patients probably all do need, though, is access to the academic medical oncologist who specialize in sarcomas so that they do get the latest information. And they also have the access to the brain trust who's doing the research around these tumors so that they are not at a disadvantage just because of location of where they live.